Welcome to the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, intended to equip and encourage business owners and aspiring entrepreneurs. Taught by active business owner, best-selling author, and teacher, Sean Castrina.
All right, this is Sean Castrina with the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm excited because I have a co-founder with me. He's the CEO and chairman of the Glass House Group, and he has a really diverse background that I think you guys are going to like. I have Kyle Kazan with me here today. Kyle, it's great to have you.
Sean, thank you for having me.
All right, so we talked for just a second there, but how did you evolve into being an entrepreneur? Because I don't think that's how you started.
You know, sometimes I would say necessity is the mother of invention, and when I graduated from college, I had the idea that I might play professional basketball. And when those opportunities were not what I would hope, I became an inner city school teacher during the recession in Los Angeles here of basically the late 80s, early 90s. And I'm working in the inner city and my pay gets cut 11% because the state's in a recession. And I said, you know, I'm not going to get a good retirement out of this. I don't believe Social Security will be there someday. And I just said, I got to figure out a way to find a way to make retirement. And that's literally what was the impetus to get me going. And I took a class on distressed real estate because that was what was going on about foreclosures.
It's funny that you mentioned that because my daughter's a school teacher and I always tell people success and or wealth starts at hour 41. In other words, you can have a job. My daughter's a school teacher, loves it, absolutely loves it. My wife's a nurse. You can have all these different things going on. It doesn't mean it's your only thing. And then the other thing that I tell people, be careful about a side hustle because too often it looks like another job to me.
So I hear you. So my first property that I bought was in 1991 and I didn't go full-time entrepreneurial where I could leave all my other, you know, because you need a job to pay your bills.
Absolutely.
And survive. So the side hustle, if you want it to become the main hustle, it took me in January of 99 is when, you know, I went from being a police officer, a school teacher doing my real estate. And then also I started a t-shirt company. And then I was able to double my main job by becoming a police officer, which enhanced my real estate since I like to buy distress, turn around, get some meat on the bone, you know, some sweat equity. And then by the time January 99 came around, I took a 1/3 pay cut. So 33% of my monthly income and annual income went away so that I could open up a small office and the kindling was just starting to smoke. And I started a little property management company with 250 units that I had acquired with a partner through syndications, putting partnerships together.
Yeah.
And I could charge what an outside managed company was charging. Wasn't much to pay, but it kept my lights on.
Yeah, it's cash flow.
And so I will tell you, it's a longer story than 10 minutes, but what I would tell you is we started with about $15 million, $20 million of real estate in 1999. And today that was 250 units. Today the company manages 7,500 units here in Southern California. And it's over $2.5 billion worth of real estate. And it all started when I was worried I would not be able to retire nicely.
Yeah, no, it's survival is a great motivation. And it is. And the other thing that I see, I remember when I lost my dream job and it was very similar to your kind of story there where I knew I may work a job, but I knew I was going to have something on the side. And my first year, I made $35,000 of passive income in a small business that I created that I didn't have to really be involved in. I'm like, extra money, $35,000 is a lot of money. And this was in 1993 when I did that. I'm like, you can pay for weddings, college tuitions. You know, you can put $5,000 effortlessly away in a retirement. You start that at age 25, leave it to age 65, see what it does for you. You'll be shocked at the numbers.
100%. And the other thing is, I want to point out, working as a school teacher and as a police officer, I love both jobs. I throw myself passionately in. All the stuff I was doing on the side never felt like a job. It was a passion. My poor sons, that we'd go to a Lakers game and I'm like, oh, on the way, we're going to stop and look at some real estate. Because that's just what we do. And I almost was just so arrogant to think, does an 8-year-old really want to go see, you know, an apartment building in South Central Los Angeles? Maybe, but I will tell you, you know, one, it was a good lesson because they are sort of knowledgeable now about it. Yeah. But two, it literally, Sean, it wasn't work. I loved, you know, I loved it as much as I like going to the Laker games.
Yeah, I was going to say, whether you like him or you don't like him, and I don't care about anybody's opinion either way, Trump's dad took him to a lot of work sites and he got the passion to build, and his kids do the same thing. I know my son's kind of followed after some things that I did that, you know, it works. I love, there's a story that Lou Holtz tells, you know, about coaching because it requires so much time. And Lou Holtz, if you ever heard him speak, incredible speaker. Basically he worked late one night and his kid said, "Hey, you know, dad, why are you working so much? Why are you working so much?" So he came home really early the next day. They go, "Dad, what are you doing?" He goes, "No." He goes, "I'm going to come home early now, but that pretty bike that I just bought you, we're not doing that anymore. You know that dress you wore to the dance? We're not doing that anymore." He came home early the next day and said, "Dad, why aren't you at work?" You know, the point was, is hard work is what pays for all the, you know, all the extras.
So I couldn't agree with you more. By the way, thanks for bringing up Lou Holtz, who I don't know if he lost when he was coaching Notre Dame against my USC Trojans. But, you know, I love that. My family has always been supportive. My wife, who I met back in college, has been with me through this crazy journey. And so when I say, "Hey, I think there's an opportunity for us to buy in Texas or Atlanta or China or Berlin, Germany," I mean, she's willing to, she's seen me just sort of pick up speed and take flyers, and it's all worked out. So it really helps to have that family that, you know, understands. And it sounds like Lou just needed 24 hours to sort of help frame everything. Exactly. And then they were able to get it well understood.
Yeah, it's amazing. So tell me this, and we're going to talk about the business you're with now, but I would love to ask you, what do you wish you would have known when you first got started that you know now you can look back and say, you know what, for me, because it may not apply to everybody, but for me, hey, this one thing, that might have been pretty good to know.
God, that's what I would tell you is I'm happy that I was arrogant. And the reason I say that was, had I known what I was going to have to go through and deal with, I would have. Not ignorance was bliss, Sean.
And I'm glad you said it, because I had somebody say it the other day, and I said the same thing about me. I will bet on me every day, all day, but it doesn't mean I need to know how hard it's going to be. When I get to it, I'm going to be shocked and go, "Wow, I didn't think it'd be this," but I'm fairly confident, hell or high water, I'm going to make it through it, but I don't need to know it. I think sometimes not knowing is a blessing in disguise.
So that is exactly my point, is I had no idea how hard it was. And I don't have an MBA. My graduate school work is in special ed and early childhood development. And my undergrad is in history. So I learned business by doing business. And I just was arrogant in figuring, I'll get through any barrier. I'll go over any wall. I'll go under anything I need to do it. And I'll make it happen. And I'll just survive. So that arrogance was key. When I look back and I say, you know, the first investments, that first investment period during the savings and loan blow up and the RTC follow up was the biggest capital dislocation in my career until cannabis. And I look back and I go, God, if I could only have bought more, if I could only have gone bigger. And what I would tell you is to your viewers, I would say, I don't want a Monday morning quarterback, because that might have been the recipe to blow me up, because I was already taking out seconds and thirds on my home. So I was going as big as I really thought I could go, and I was taking it as quick as I could. But if that's the regret where I go, oh, I only wish, because some of those properties that I bought are ATM machines today. Yeah. And if I wish I had 10 more, but so I guess I would tell you is the path that I was on, I don't want to question, because I'm too busy thanking the Kyle from his 20s
that
put me in his 50s in this position. And what I would tell you when I'm asked, because, you know, like you, I get asked, "Hey, you know, pay it forward. What would you, you know?"
Yeah, I was getting ready to bring that. My next question was going to be, so if you were talking to a startup entrepreneur, what advice, what's the one or two pieces of advice? We were going to segue right into that. So this is perfect.
You know, there's one thing is, don't be afraid to ask. go to, and I'm sorry, I'm on Long Beach Boulevard, so there's a...
No problem.
Sadly, someone going to the hospital right now. Another reason to be happy. We're having a great day because somebody is not. What I would tell you is...
Sorry. I got a producer. We'll make that work.
Okay. But there were some people that were very generous with their time that really had... They were extremely successful, and I was not bashful, and I said, can I have an hour? I'll pay for the time. I'll bring you coffee. And people are, they're happy to share if you hit them the right way. And so they gave me so much good advice. These are people that had thousands of apartment units. Their companies still go on today. And I was just honored to be in their presence. And I had my notepad. I mean, I always walk around with, I have a notepad just sitting right next to me because I never know. You're going to say something, I got to write it down.
I have one right here. I've been taking notes during the whole thing.
I'm always ready. And so what I would tell you is, you know, don't be scared to ask. Get as much information as you can, but then don't let the analysis cause paralysis. At some point, take the plunge and know that if you lose, meaning, it's a failure. You just paid for some education. You just paid for it, and you won't make that mistake. You'll make new mistakes. And so that to me is, you know, if you wanted to become Sean, then do the research on Sean, find a way to contact Sean and get 30 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour. Face-to-face is always better, but if you can just get you on the phone and then have your questions ready and then send a handwritten thank you note. I'm old school that way. And keep in touch, and then ask Sean, is there anybody else I should talk to? And learn from Sean's mistake, learn from Kyle's mistake.
It's funny you say that, because I had a mentor that I just would take to lunch once a month, and that was it was 1 hour of his time, and I didn't waste it. And it's, you know, it's the funny thing I've always told people, failure is best heard through a secondhand story, and it's a hell of a lot cheaper.
It certainly is, but there's, you know, when you hear about someone shooting their toe off and you shoot your toe off, one, you will never forget. Hopefully both you don't, but that one, you know, the mistakes I've made and the toe stubbing I've done are invaluable. The victories, you don't learn nearly as much. They're wonderful.
No, it's definitely definitely the trips in the road, the speed bumps. So tell us about the company you're currently CEO and co-founder of, and what kind of brought you to this. Give me the quick version of how you end up in the cannabis world.
Sure. So I will say, after 5 years as a police officer and someone who for 20% of that time led the department in felony and misdemeanor arrests, was heavily involved in the drug war. And it wasn't, you know, several years after I left the department, I started speaking out very openly about the failure of the drug war in the United States. By any, you know, it's talking to a person like yourself, Sean, where I just go, let me lay out some business metrics on what we've gotten for $1.5 trillion. You'd go, yeah, if this were any other business, we would cut bait and do something completely different. Yeah. So I started speaking out. I was on CNN, Fox, and then the legalization of marijuana movement sort of just swept up.
Yeah.
And then when that happened, people started approaching me because I was very public, and they knew I was an investor. And when I talked about the biggest capital dislocation, meaning you find opportunities, it's hard to get capital because there's so many sellers, not enough buyers. That was when I started real estate, but I could still get 80% debt, 75% debt. And then I just had to raise the rest of it through some other means. Cannabis, federally illegal, no banking, no this, no that. I was like, wow, this is incredible. And so as I saw momentum take hold, I started taking it. At first I said, no, I don't want to touch this. I just want to be an advocate. But the entrepreneur, and Sean, you know that bug.
Yeah.
You go to a restaurant on vacation, you're like, you know, I could open up a sandwich shop here.
Yeah.
And so when it came to this, I looked at it and I said, this is going to be the biggest capital dislocation of my career. My regret in the past is I didn't go fast enough when I had a huge capital dislocation. Let me put my toe in the water. I've got a great reputation with my investors. I'll send out an email and a letter, and you know, a bunch of money came back, and we started just buying some assets, and the entrepreneurial spirit picked up, and We were lucky. There's always luck involved with good fortune.
Absolutely.
And we made some, I think, some pretty adroit moves, got the good tailwind of luck behind us. And we sit here today as one of the largest cannabis companies in the largest cannabis market in the world, which is California. And we are seed to sale and we are EBITDA positive. So it's, you can count on one hand, I think, large vertically integrated companies in this state that are EBITDA positive, and next year, first quarter, will be cash flow positive.
And that's incredible. Again, I have the co-founder of Glasshouse, which I'm going to call Glasshouse Group. I have Kyle Kazan with me here today. We talked about so many things. Sometimes I forget about the core business of why we're starting the interview. We've gone all over the place, from real estate, started out as a teacher, then a police officer, and now he is running, you know, obviously a cannabis company. Entrepreneurship, it's funny because how you've kind of evolved. The industry has never been that important to me as much as, is it a good, can I make money? Is it legal? Is there a demand for it? I'm fascinated by business in general, preferably profitable businesses. And then my passion just kind of weaves its way into it.
100%. And you ask, is it legal? So the answer to that is no. Yeah. It's federally illegal. That was the big thing where, you know, this was not my first venture. I was already, you know, I've got a lot of stuff going already.
Yeah.
And I took a bunch of after-tax capital that my wife and I had. And I said, Diane, I'm feeling this makes sense. And here are the risks. And my business partner and I hired an attorney. It's amazing. 70-year-old partner at a huge law firm. Basically, they show you the door at 70. So he said, look, can we just pay you 10 grand and come up with reasons why we should or should not do this? And he blasted the idea. We had lovely wine, our wives at this great restaurant here in Long Beach, California. And then I thought about what he said. I synthesized everything he said. And I go, the next day I call my partner. I go, I'm in. I'm doing it. I've listened to the most conservative and I get it. And we're going to just lay out all the information. We're going to tell our investors, you shouldn't do this. And this is why. And ultimately, it came down to really getting to know this plant and we're all shaped by our experiences.
Yeah.
I can tell you stories of people that overdosed on heroin and opioids and things like that. When I looked at cannabis, I go, it's got a medicinal.
I agree. This is what I tell people. Listen, I smoked pot one time and it could have been oregano. So I'm speaking from the guy who has it, but this is what I'll tell you. I joke, my parents who live in my guest house, they were far better parents smoking pot. I'm just going to let you know safer, because all they did is they were calm and ordered pizza. I've been around alcohol. I'll tell you right now, I'll take pot and everything about it over alcohol. I can drive 2 miles, go to an ABC liquor store and buy enough alcohol to wreck my car all day long. So that, and I don't even smoke pot, and I'm like, that has never made sense to me.
You know, I love that story, by the way, about your folks. What I would tell you is, you look at this face and you go, not a bad looking guy. Maybe he's aging okay. Seems halfway smart. You get some alcohol on you, and I put a badge on, and for some reason, this thing looks like a punching bag. So, but you smoke a doob, and you go, hey, I don't feel like hitting that cop. I just kind of want to talk to him and chill out. So
no, that's been my experience with employees and everything. I've never had pot be the breaking point of anything. It's always was alcohol or a high level, you know, narcotic.
So Sean, I think we're probably in the same ballpark of age, and I'll tell you, let me show you some pot I keep on my desk. I take daily and go, okay, is it going to be, it's a tincture that's high CBD. And the people that I live in a nice affluent area of LA, and I'll tell you, they may squawking or they may go, you're the pot guy now. You're the this. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. I go, you don't do pot? Oh, in college. I'm like, are you in pain? Well, yeah, I sprained my ankle sleeping last night. I'm like, yeah, that happens. I go, try this. And if you just keep it to the bottom of the dropper, you won't get high. But you do this 4 times a day and your cannabinoid level will be up. There's so much about it. And then the other thing is, for folks that you go, oh my God, so-and-so in my family is addicted to opioids. If they relapse, they could die, which it happens. I believe me, it's really sad. It happens. But there's not one recorded overdose of cannabis. And I will tell you, it can get you high as heck, but you won't die. And so to me, and then there's everywhere in between where instead of having four glasses of wine, you have one glass of wine, but you want that Friday night relaxation buzz. Just relax and either eat an edible or something like that. So I so love to be in this. On the business side, I can tell you, let's talk dollars and cents. I'd blow your mind, Sean. You're going to go, I got to get in that business if you can get past the federal illegalization. But I quite frankly, I just think the feds are going to bend to the will of the people, which it's going to be like 47 states after November are legal. It's absolutely ridiculous that Congress hasn't gone, hello, you know, if you're old like me, McFly, hello.
Yeah.
The people, this is a democracy, they want this. And by the way, the taxes pay for the cops.
I was just going to say that it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer on the just on the tax end of it. I'm saying when you can't win a fight, you tax it.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's really simple.
Want to lock people up. I saw in South Dakota, it's on the ballot. 10% of all arrests in South Dakota were marijuana, and there was an officer a retired officer, and he said each arrest cost $4,000.
Yeah, it's insane.
So it's like he just laid it out and goes. And if you legalize it, now you'll make that much more money. And by the way, I think the people of South Dakota are going to vote, might as well. Let's not arrest anybody. And if you want the freedom to try it, go for it. It'll be tested. It'll be taxed. It'll be regulated, just like alcohol.
Yeah. No, again, the argument is very parallel with me. I'm a very simple person. If alcohol is legal and you can do a DWI and happens at way too fast of a rate, way too common, please don't talk to me about marijuana because that would drive me crazy. I'm so excited. I have Kyle Kazan with me today. He's the CEO and co-founder of the Glasshouse Group. Hey, we've had a great conversation. Kyle, I want to thank you for being on the podcast. How can people, you know, obviously I give you 30 seconds to have the floor. You can connect in any way you'd like.
You know, Sean, thank you very much. What I would tell you is if you want to look up Glasshouse Group and our products, www.glasshousegroup.com. And I would tell you, thanks for listening to Sean. You know, that side hustle could be, you could be Ray Kroc and a millionaire in your 50s. So I would tell you, go chase your dreams. You're listening to the right guy and go for it.
Hey, this is Sean Kasserian with the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, where we equip, encourage, and educate entrepreneurs. Thank you for listening. We will talk again tomorrow.